Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones! Bowden! He's got it! England have won the World Cup! But the Bills have
won! Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on!
Always look on the right side of life.
Well, I think that's the only way of looking at it, really, with that drubbing that England have received in Chennai. Defeat by 327 runs. Colossal performance by India, really. 1-1 in the series now. And, well, what positives can England take? They like to say we take the positives out of any situation. Are there any positives from this one? Well, there certainly are from India's point of view, the way they played. But England, what have they learnt? I mean, they're trying to learn all the time. But what they've learned, I think, from this experience is they can't play the ball when it's turning and lifting as much as that.
Here are the positives that England took out of this test match, Yoz. I'm about to list them. There we go. I've just listed them for you. It was that sort of game, wasn't it? It happens every now and again in test match cricket. It happens to England in a situation where they're, you know, playing against a very good Indian side in home conditions. It's the first time since 1995 that England have failed to score 300 runs in a test match. And that match back in 1995 was against the West Indies at Edgbaston, and it was the game in which Curtly Ambrose bowled that ball to Mike Atherton that went over his head, over the wicketkeeper's head, and I think it hit the sight screen, didn't it, on the full or something like that. It was a remarkable delivery. That was a very uneven pitch at Edgbaston. And, you know, sometimes conditions are too difficult. They were too difficult for England in that match in 95, and I think they were too difficult for England in this game as well. Their skill set in these conditions, they just couldn't cope. Is as simple as that. India played very well. They played the conditions well. Congratulations to them. Brilliant innings. We've said it throughout the test match. Brilliant innings from Rohit Sharma, who I think was, what a total injustice that he wasn't named man of the match. But there we go. Ravi Chandran Ashwin didn't even take his 5 wickets in the second innings. He didn't even take 10 wickets in the match. There we go.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's a good point. It's a good point. I mean, and it's a really interesting point you say about England not being able to cope. And I suppose it's a cultural thing, really. You know, when you see a pitch like that, where the ball's exploding and turning on the first day, never mind the fourth day, you do, as an Englishman, and I'm not necessarily defending this attitude, but you do sort of think, I can't play on that. How am I supposed to play on that? And I remember first batting on a pitch in Sri Lanka when I was 19 or 20, and it was a matting pitch, and the ball was turning off this mat, which was pulled very tight. And it was a jute mat as well, so the ball was really gripping. And I received a couple of balls from an off-spinner, which bounced on a length and went over my left shoulder and were taken sort of down the leg side. And you do feel when you see those very unfamiliar sort of alien conditions, how am I supposed to play on here? But I'd say two things about that, really. One is that when you're brought up abroad, and I'll give you an example, Shivnarine Chandrapal, brought up in Guyana. I actually went to a piece of land where he used to practice in by the Demerara River, and they used a rubber ball there, which normally had bits sort of chewed out of it or scuffed out of it because they couldn't afford a lot of kit, so they used the same rubber ball. It would bounce literally head high from a length off bits of ground which were uneven, or you know, half a tree root or something like that. It was the only flat bit of ground they could play on, and it was unbelievably difficult to try and play on there. But that's how he got brought up playing, and he obviously evolved a method. The Indians get brought up, you know, when they go and play on the Maidan in Mumbai or on the Maidan in Calcutta when they're kids, you know, you get used to completely no grass, just pure sand and the balls spinning and bouncing. And it's not that they're better in a way at dealing with the spinning ball. It's more that they're better at putting it out of their head and just focusing on the next ball and having a response to it. And I was watching Ben Stokes batting against Ravi Ashwin in this last day's play. And honestly, he was totally clueless and he became totally strokeless. So that actually a couple of times in the over in which he was out and a couple of overs before that, he could easily have got off strike with balls that drifted down the leg side. But his mindset was, it seemed to me, was, I can't bat on this. It's only a matter of time. And you know, in the end, you know, he got a ball which didn't really turn much and he got an inside edge and he was caught. Good catch. But he'd had a couple of spitting cobras before that, which obviously he couldn't play. And if you allow that to infect your mindset, then you're never going to succeed. So I suppose the learnings from England's point of view for this test, is that, yeah, you are going to have to deal with these unbelievably difficult circumstances. But the best way to overcome them is to almost sort of shut them out and just play the next ball. It sounds like a cliche. Just play the next ball on its merits. If it's unplayable and you get a ball like Joe Root did and you can't do anything about it, walk off and accept it. But also, you've got to look to try and score runs somehow. And that means just treating each ball on its merits.
Or just slog it into the stands like Moeen Ali did later on. He was on for the fastest half century in Test cricket. 43 from 17 balls. He needed to get there in 21 balls to equal Misbah, and he had a huge wipe at Yadav and was stumped by Pant. It was exciting while it lasted. But of course, the big talking point surrounding Moeen now is that he is going home. And this is his rest. This is his established rest from the bubble. It was agreed before the tour, before they went to Sri Lanka, that he would miss these two test matches. And of course, other players are missing other games as well. Butler's missing the last three tests of this series. Best have missed the first two tests. He's coming back in now. You know, he's back in the bubble in India. So this was Moeen's agreed rest. The issue is that Moeen was asked to stay because of his, well, it's been a rather difficult tour, hasn't it? It's not gone to plan because he got COVID and therefore he couldn't play in Sri Lanka, and then he wasn't quite right for the first test in India, so they went with Bess again, and he's got his chance in this game. And they asked him to stay and he said, no, I need my time out of the bubble. And of course, he's coming back to play in the 2020 matches. And people say, well, it's only 2020, but of course, this is World Cup T20 year, but it's also Ashes year. So, you know, which captain, Root or Morgan, gets the players, exactly the players he wants. And England are playing their strongest squad in the 2020 matches against India. So at the moment, it looks as though, it looks from the outside, Morgan's getting what he wants. Anyway, the point, I'm getting slightly off the point here, but Moeen was asked to stay, said, no, I need my time off. Now, my take on that is that's fine, that these were agreed, and players in these uncertain, difficult times are allowed time off, and it has been stipulated, and that's what he wants to do, and you have to respect that decision. In the same way with Bairstow and Butler as well, that you have to respect those decisions. It's just one of those situations. It's unique. We're in a unique situation, and England just have to get on with it. No Moeen for the last two test matches, but he'd be back for the white ball.
Fair enough. It's as you say, unreal circumstances, so you have to accept it. I hope, though, that both Bess and Moeen and Jack Leach as well studied the way that particularly Ravi Ashwin bowled on this fourth day and earlier in the match. I think it's fascinating watching how he bowls two or three balls over the wicket, then he goes round the wicket, he tries different spots on the crease, he tries slightly different releases. Obviously, he's very skillful, and not every bowler is able to bowl with different grips and different releases and different places on the crease. But just his strategy, the way he's trying to undermine the batsman with different angles, different paces, slightly different trajectories, that's something that all spinners could learn from, I think. You know, he's an absolutely fascinating study of how to make the most of your natural ability. I mean, just before Stokes was out, he was over the wicket two or three balls, then round the wicket, angling it in. Then he tried a carom ball. Then he went back over the wicket again. Then he went round. You know, he's just playing with a batsman. And that's what spinners have to do, especially in these conditions when they're in their favour. I don't think you can expect to just run up and bowl and turn your arm over and turn your arm over. The thing about Moeen, and I don't want to sound too critical of him, because look, he's taken eight wickets. He hasn't played a first-class game for a year. He did incredibly well in the conditions, considering. But you want a bit more from Moeen, I think. And he's now played 60 tests. And I still feel he's a mechanical bowler. And I don't feel he uses all the kind of things in his favour, field settings and just bits of strategy that could get a batsman out. I don't really feel he's developed as a bowler, even though he's got 160 odd test wickets. So I hope that both he and Bess will have had a real careful look at the way Ashwin did it and maybe emerge better as a result.
Well, let's hear from Joe Root, England's captain. We've talked a lot about the pitch on this podcast during this test match. We've talked about England's spinners. You talked about them there. And I've put those points to Joe Root about the quality of England's spin in this match. You know, people saying, well, you know, the India spinners bowled well on it. If there's an excessive turn, why didn't England spinners come up with better? Well, I ask him about this. We start, though, with the pitch and what Joe Root thought of the surface that was provided in Chennai for this test match.
I say it was a challenging wicket. And I do think that the toss was an important one to win, but it wouldn't have guaranteed us to win the game either. The fact is that India have showed that you can score runs on it and found a way of managing a very tricky surface. So for us, I think we've got to learn from that. We've got to take bits from it, add it to our own games, and come back better for it as well. They're very different to what a lot of our guys will have experienced before. But as long as we learn from it, then we'll be a better side in the future. It might not be that when we come to bat on day two of a game that it spins as much as it did this time around, or performs how it did this time around, but it might be days three, four, five, where it becomes a little bit more challenging. And now we've got that in the bank. Hopefully guys will be able to take that forward and be better for it.
Moeen 8 for 226, Jack Leach 8 for 178. Did you actually want more from your spinners in these conditions? You described it as a challenging pitch. Did you want more from your spinners?
What I would say is that I think as a bowling group, we've spoken a lot recently about building pressure for long periods of time. I think one thing that we could have got a little bit better, especially on day one, was just squeeze the game for longer. Try and bowl six balls at one batter. Try and make it difficult for them to rotate strike and create pressure that way. And I think that's one thing that we can take forward for the rest of the tour. Can we find ways of keeping the board quieter for longer? Can we string maidens together? And can we force errors through very disciplined passages of play with the ball? That's one thing I think that they did a lot better than us. And I also think that one thing our batters need to learn is that how well they manage to rotate strike, how they manage to bat at the other end on a very challenging surface. So as long as we look at the game honestly, we look at areas that we can improve on. I think they did a lot of good stuff as well in the middle of all that. So we're always looking forward as a team. And we don't get too hard on ourselves after this week. You've got to remember, we won all in this series. We're very much in it, very much a part of it. We played three brilliant games coming into this one. So as long as we stay level, keep working hard, we're very much alive and kicking in this series.
What's happening to Mo now? Is he going home?
Yeah, Moen's chose to go home. It's obviously been a very tricky tour for him. And as mentioned at the start, players feel like they need to get out of the bubble then. And that's been an option. And I think it's really important that we stand by that. And that decision's been made. And hopefully it feels better for it.
Just on the batting side of things, I mean, is it a case sometimes that the puzzle is too difficult to solve? I mean, you talked about how you can play, but sometimes the conditions can be too much against you.
I think one thing we've got to bear in mind, and we've got to be quite realistic about it, is there is very few examples that a very young batting group will face conditions like that. So one thing that we coming here, you know, on this tour is there's a number of guys that hadn't been to Sri Lanka before, there's a number of guys that haven't played in India before, never mind an extremity as this cricket provided. So we've been very good at learning quite quickly. And that's why we've had success away from home in recent times. It's important that we just take that forward again. There's not many times guys will have batted on a wicket that's bounced and spun and misbehaved as much as that. I think one thing that I take from the way that they played it was how calm they stayed, how unflustered they were when those deliveries did really misbehave. They didn't waver from their game plan, how they knew exactly where they were going to score their runs, how they managed to bat at the other end for long periods of time. And I think they're just a few of the things that, as a batting group, we've got to look at, right, how does that look for us individually? How am I going to manage these big turning deliveries, and how am I going to stay really calm and clear under pressure?
Now, Johnny Bairstow and Zach Crawley are back. They're available. Are they right in the frame? And I mean right in the frame for selection for the next Test match?
Yeah, I'm sure that they'll want to get some more time in practice and utilise the lead up to this next game. But we'll put a squad out there as soon as we're ready. And anyone in that squad is obviously up for selection.
Well, that was Joe Root on a variety of issues after England's heavy defeat in Chennai. I personally thought, Yoz, that the game was sort of decided on the first day. 300 for six was just too many. And I think Root touched on it there, didn't he, when he was talking about England's spinners, you know, that they weren't consistent enough. They didn't give him enough control. And it's funny, isn't it? In a match in which the batsmen failed to get 300 collectively, we're looking at the bowlers. But I think you can expect a bit more. You can expect a bit more from the spinners in conditions like this. As you say, they sort of did okay-ish, but actually they needed more than okay-ish on this surface. Even on the first day. I mean, let's face it. We've talked a lot about the pitch and whether it was a poor pitch, and we can actually look at the ICC definition of a poor pitch in just a moment. But on that first day, Moeen ripped one through the gate, didn't he, against Kohli? He dismissed him for naught with one that really ragged and took something out of the surface. So I just think you want a bit more on that first day from your slow bowlers. And I'm sure Root was feeling that as well, that they would have walked off in that first day and thought 300 for six, well, not really sure about that as a first day for us. It looks okay-ish on the scoreboard, but I mean, I know it sounds weird to say it, but it felt like 480, 500 already in the Test match. It was just worth so much more than normal on a normal surface.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. And what you're wanting from your spinners is artistry, imagination, subtlety, just to try and outwit the batsman. You can't deny that was an incredibly brilliant innings by Rohit Sharma. He recognised the threat. For instance, he twice, or several times actually, assaulted Moeen on the exact line and length of the ball that dismissed Kohli. He either sought to sweep it with a big extension of the arms and hit it flat through or over mid-wicket, or come down the wicket and either clip it through the leg side, or when Joe Root blocked that route and put a man sort of short mid on himself, then he came down the wicket and hit him over mid off. Again, trying to knock him off his length. Well, if a batsman is good enough to do that, you've got to try other ways to unseat him. And so I thought Moeen should have maybe tried round the wicket for a bit just to change the angle, to upset the batsman's rhythm. Because Rohit was playing well, he got 80-odd in the first session and was very fluent. So you've got to find a way of blocking up those scoring routes and make them think about a different way of playing. Kohli actually had to adjust his technique after that first innings dismissal. He then stood more on off stump to Moen in the second innings and obviously got his 60 runs. And he admitted, yeah, I'm a bit rigid about my technique, but I realised I had to adapt there and change and play a different way. Well, if Kohli can do it, then I think bowlers need to look at that as well. And I don't mean that they've got to come up and bowl all sorts of different varieties or, you know, try and bowl magic balls all the time. But if a batsman's on top of you, you've got to find a way of trying to upset his rhythm and make him do something different. And I just think because Jack Leach is still a work in progress, really, because he hasn't played that much international cricket, and Moen, you get what you get from Moen. He's the same every time. He'll bowl great balls. He'll also bowl ordinary balls. There's not much deep thinking about his bowling. It's just a natural skill. And unless you've got spinners who've got a little bit more broad-mindedness, I think, and sort of strategy up their sleeve, they're never going to improve.
Yeah. I mean, these conditions, the conditions we had in this test match, India have got all the aces with which to go on and be successful and crush an England team like this. I mean, even Root in this match, who's a very good player of spin bowling, you know, was stymied. The ball he got out to today was just unplayable. It was impossible. It would have got any batsman out. I mean, it's just unplayable. I just look at the ICC definition of a poor pitch. You know, there's been a lot of conjecture about the pitch and whether it was poor. And I'm not taking anything away from India, by the way, on this, because they completely outplayed England. They've got the stronger suits. Rohit played brilliantly, and they've got better spinners, and we knew that. But just the definition of a poor pitch is one that doesn't allow an even contest between bat and ball. And on spin, it talks about excessive assistance to the spinners early in the match. There's also another stipulation about what a poor pitch is as well, is that if it's excessively flat, so it can be too good for batting. You know, if you get a match where it's 600 plays 600, that can be considered to be a poor pitch as well. So a poor pitch is considered to be one where there's excessive assistance to the spinners early on. Was there excessive assistance to the spinners early on?
Yes, totally. I think it was a poor pitch. That's not taking anything away from India. They played better on it. I don't think it would have made any difference who won the toss. India were better equipped to play on that pitch. You look at players like Dan Lawrence, Dominic Sibley, Rory Burns, even Ben Stokes, you know, Ollie Pope. They're not used to playing on pitches like that. Whereas the Indians are brought up on it, maybe not spinning quite to that degree or bouncing as much as that, but certainly a level below that. They're used to it. They know how to handle it. They don't worry about it. And the English players just can't handle it. And so, yeah, I think it was a poor pitch because it did too much on that first day. Not just spin, but exploding off a length as well and taking pieces out of the wicket. So I think it was a poor pitch.
Yeah, and England's biggest problem was they did not make the most of that on the first day. It's as simple as that. Their spinners could not have the same effect that India's spinners did when they came to bowl in the second and fourth innings of the match. Let's look ahead, Yoz. Ahmedabad now, completely different setting and set of circumstances as well, because it's going to be a day-night test match with a pink ball. We don't quite know how that's going to react. It's a new ground as well. The one test match that's been played under lights in India was in Eden Gardens, and it's something like 19 of the... I think there's one wicket to spin. It was a crushing victory for India against Bangladesh. I think 19 of the 20 wickets they took were through pace. So that's one thing. Will they take England on like that? I don't know. So we'll have to wait and see how it's going to react, the pink ball. But what do England do with their team? I'm thinking one obvious thing is Bairstow for Lawrence at three. Jimmy Anderson comes back. Jofra Archer presumably comes back, and if England might feel that the ball is going, the circumstances are going to help the pace bowlers more, and they might go with just one spinner. Who knows? But I suspect that you'd think that there's going to be some assistance for India spinners again, wouldn't you? So England presumably bring back Bess for Moen Ali. That's from a distance anyway. That's how it seems to me.
Yeah, it's really hard to know, isn't it? Because as you say, new venue, pink ball. The pink balls still turn. It might swing a little bit, But Ahmedabad is a dry place, not just alcoholic-wise, but also climate-wise.
Yeah.
And I can't see the ball swinging a lot, but it might just do a little bit under lights. So I'd say probably a balanced attack would be right. I still think England will probably need three seamers and two spinners. Yeah, I'd certainly look at Bairstow coming in for Lawrence at number three, a bit more experience. I'd keep the opening pair together. Because
so not Crawley for Burns then? Not Crawley for Burns?
It's pretty hard to... I mean, Crawley didn't excel in Sri Lanka and he hasn't played for a while. So that's tough ask for him really to come back in, especially at number three.
He'd open, wouldn't he? He'd open. He'd be best out at three and Crawley for Burns opening, do you not think?
Yeah. I would stay with Burns. Burns is now... Look at the way Sibley really improved after those first three innings in Sri Lanka. By the fourth innings, he played really well. Burns has now had four test innings in India. Maybe on the fifth one, he can start to find a bit more rhythm and he'll probably receive a lot more seam bowling in that test match than he has so far early in the innings. So he'll feel a little bit more at home. So I think I'd stick with Burns for at least one more test match and give Crawley a bit more time and look to play a balanced attack because there's probably going to be opportunities for all bowlers.
Yeah. Burns so far, 33, 0, 0 and 25 in his four innings. Of course, he's come to the winter late because of the birth of his first child. What about Ben Stokes? He only bowled two overs in the match. The word from the England management is, yeah, he's fine. You know, the knee is not a problem. Joe Root saying in his press conference that the reason he didn't bowl that much in the game was because of the conditions. It didn't dictate that they needed him that much to bowl in the game. You can see the logic behind that. You know, it was a raging turner, and therefore you want your spinners to do the job, which, you know, overall, I think you could say they didn't. So you'd hope that Stokes definitely would be able to play a part in Ahmedabad with the ball as well. You talk about a balanced attack. You know, he's very important to the balance of that attack.
Yeah. You're not looking for him to bowl a lot of overs, though, are you? So maybe 15, 20 overs in the match. He's got another week to recover whatever issues he's got, if there are any. So, yeah, I think he should be fine. So the result in this test match has rather thrown us off course in terms of the Cricketer magazine. Only slightly, because, of course, we had to go to press just after the first test. So we put Joe Root on the front cover, sweeping England to victory, because he did in the first test. But, of course, a week on, the story's moved on as well. And by the time the Cricketer comes out this week, it won't look quite so prescient having Joe Root sweeping into victory on the cover. But that's unfortunately the lottery of producing a magazine 10 days or coming out 10 days after you've written it. So I hope people will forgive us, but look out for it actually, because it's a good celebration of Test cricket. The magazine put to bed just after that dramatic West Indies win in Bangladesh, as well as the England win in India in Chennai. So a big theme really for the magazine, this issue, is about the Test cricket sort of having a renaissance in a way, which has been great to see. And of course it's on Channel 4 as well, which everybody's enjoying, seeing cricket back on, Test cricket back on terrestrial TV live. And you can get to the Cricketer magazine by going to www.thecricketer.com.
And coming up after the break, some reaction from India.
In the second half of this show, we're going to hear from a very eminent Indian journalist, Anand Vasu. We had him on, actually, after the first test in Chennai. He used to write for the Hindustan Times and Crick Info, amongst others. Now he works for The Guardian. But you're a man who comes from Chennai, so you know the terrain really well. What's been the response, or what's been the reaction locally to that dramatic Indian win?
I think it's been one of relief more than anything else after what happened in the first test match. There's been also, as you would expect, plenty of chatter about the pitch. But I think the biggest thing has been that Ashwin did the job with ball and then with bat. And he's obviously a very much loved cricketer in these parts. He played most of his cricket growing up at that very ground in Chepauk. And with the fans coming back for the first time, for the homeboy to be the hero was a big moment. I think the Indian team connected with their fans also particularly well, went out of their way, made an effort to keep the fans in the game. And the first thing was just being able to go back to the grounds and watch cricket. And then to see a convincing Indian victory was just the icing on the cake, really.
You were part of that crowd. What impact did the crowd have on the Indian team?
Well, through the course of the game, different players have said that it did make a big impact. I think when they played the first test, they believed that, being professionals and having played domestic cricket in front of empty stands quite a bit, it wouldn't really make a difference to them. But when they did actually get into the game, especially when on that first day when England were on top, they found it much harder to lift themselves. They found it harder to get that intensity up to the levels they used to. And in that sense, the crowd played a big role. Virat Kohli is generally the person who plays the role of kind of exhorting the crowd to support his bowlers, especially when the fast bowlers are running in the hot sun, and it was hot on a couple of days in this test match. Kohli does that. He tends to wind the opposition up and get the crowd going. It's something he did in this game as well. And the crowd responded. They love it. They love to get into it when their captain asks them to. And it keeps them involved in the game, and it gives them a feeling that they're contributing as well.
Tell us a bit about Ravi Ashwin. I know he, as you say, comes from Chennai, and he has spent a lot of time developing his game. I think he learnt to play cricket, not on the beach exactly, but in the streets, experimenting with different deliveries. He also played carom, I think, or at least he learnt the carom ball from that board game, which is very much a local sort of delicacy in Chennai, isn't it?
Well, yes, and I think pretty much anyone who starts playing cricket in India, and especially in Chennai, would start by playing it on the street with a tennis ball or a rubber ball. So that's not especially unusual. But in Ashwin's case, when he was young, he always wanted to be a batsman. And that's how he played his early cricket. His junior cricket was as an opening batsman. He even played for India under 17 as an opening batsman, failed in a couple of games and was replaced by Rohit Sharma back then. It was much later that he started bowling off spin. And when he began, he said this himself, he would try and copy the actions of off spinners that he particularly enjoyed watching, including guys like Harbhajan Singh. And as he developed in the game, realized that he could bring much more to the table as a spinner than as a batsman. And even early on in his first class career, no one was quite sure what to make of him, because he was not your traditional off spinner in that he's tall by Indian standards. He bowled with a very high arm action. So it was not the kind of flight and dip and big turn that you are used to getting from spinners in the subcontinent. There was more subtlety to his game, and it took time, I think, for people to appreciate the skill he had, and it took time for Ashwin himself to learn what the best ways might be for him to pick up wickets. In the process, he experimented a lot. He bowled the carom ball. He bowls the undercutter. There's times when he's bowled leg spin. He's bowled googlies. He bowls pretty much all sorts. It took him a while to realize that while T20 cricket might be a good place to show off four different deliveries in an over, in first-class cricket and in test cricket, it was the subtle variations that were going to help him in the long run. And to that end, changing speed, trying to get more overspin on the ball, working on different delivery points, using the width of the crease and changing angles, these are the kind of things that he's got very, very adept at doing in the recent past. And he's a complete cricket nut. He's a cricket tragic, if that's the word. When he's not playing, he's watching other international cricket or other domestic cricket. When he's not watching cricket, he's talking about cricket to someone else. Even now, after he's played 70-plus test matches and plenty of international cricket, when he comes back home to Chennai, if he sees a street game going on outside his house, he joins the kids and plays with them. He's that much of a cricket nut.
Actually, I think he told me once he owns a cricket club as well.
Well, yes, and he's... I'm not sure about ownership, but he's definitely heavily involved with the cricket academy. He literally cannot stay away from the game. Most cricketers, international cricketers, after a certain point, when they finish their day job or when they finish working, the last thing they want to do is deal with cricket, and they completely switch off. It's not like that with Ashwin. 24 hours in a day is not enough for him in terms of cricket.
I bet he can't understand the idea of Moeen Ali going home, actually, after that test match, though that's obviously a completely different issue. And how was the pitch perceived by the locals? I mean, obviously in England, there have been people like me who've said it was fairly poor, really, even though it was the same for both sides. What was the take on the pitch in India?
Well, I think in India, people are far more used to seeing pitches of this kind, and certainly in the last few years, because one thing that Virat Kohli has been demanding is that the pitch stays more or less the same from day one, so that it takes the toss out of the equation as a major factor. Like in the first test match, that pitch was clearly a different pitch on day one and on day five. This pitch, yes, it did a lot from the beginning. And I think what alarmed a lot of people, especially those who are not used to seeing it, are the puffs of dust coming out on day one. And they kind of thought, if it's doing this on day one, then what is it going to be doing by day five? We didn't get a chance to find out what it would have done on day five. But if you look back at the game, it's not as though, apart from perhaps Joe Root's dismissal on the fourth day, there weren't that many balls that caused dismissal. It was not like the ball is spitting from a length and hitting people on the head, or which Indian pitches against spin have done not very long ago. In that sense, I think there is a little bit of bemusement, and there's a little bit of resentment even locally at some of the language that has been used to describe this pitch. Some people have said it's a disgrace. Some people have suggested that India should be docked points in the World Test Championship for this pitch. The people I've spoken to locally, most of them think and believe that the only reason this game didn't go the distance was because England weren't good enough to bat properly on it in the first innings and didn't do much better in the second. You know, when Ashwin, who's been in decline as a batsman for a while now, comes in at number 8 and scores a century, plays 150 balls, and then number 10 and 11 play 25 balls each, it's a bit difficult to understand why England's batsmen couldn't apply themselves more in these conditions.
No, you make completely fair points there. I was one of the people who said India should be dot points. It wasn't entirely a serious point, but I concede that the pitch didn't get a lot worse, actually. It started out very difficult and never really got that much worse. It was, I think, a poor pitch for a five-day test. But as you say, these pitches in India are quite common. So, and nobody got injured. I do remember Rohit Sharma getting hit in the face playing a sweep shot fairly early in the game. But still, you know, I agree with you that it was just that England were inadequate on it. So what can we expect in Ahmedabad? We're all wondering, maybe you are too, given it's a new stadium.
Well, it's a new stadium, but the stadium's been built at the same ground where the old stadium was. It's only the kind of construction that's new. The actual playing field is the same one that you've been playing on in Ahmedabad for years. But the only thing that's got everybody wondering, and someone asked me this about halfway through the second test at the ground in Chepauk, they said, what would happen if you prepared a turning track or a dust bowl or a dry surface or whatever you want to call it, a beach, if you will, for a day-night test with a pink ball? Because I don't think that has ever been attempted. Essentially, all pink ball tests have been very seam-friendly, swing under lights, and that sort of thing. No one really knows what will happen if you prepare a pitch like this for a day-night game. I don't think it's been tried. I'm not sure you'll get anything like the second test pitch in Ahmedabad, but I wouldn't stick my neck out yet and kind of talk about what the pitch might be like. I'll be there in a week, so I'll be able to tell you a bit more then.
Okay, well, that'd be really interesting. And meantime, I guess life in Chennai must be completely different to a week ago when England won the first test match and crowd had been allowed back into the stadium and seen a brilliant Indian victory. So it must be really buzzing in Chennai now.
It absolutely is. And there was some concern about how the crowds would be, whether there would even be a decent enough crowd for this match. Not only because people are not sure of what to expect when going out, whether it's safe, whether it's not. But then finally, when it came time to open the gates, none of this seemed to matter. And, you know, there was social distancing pretty much only in name. People were sitting right next to each other in crowded stands. A lot of them weren't wearing masks, which is, of course, a serious concern when you're happy that the crowds came back. But there really are slightly bigger issues that the world is dealing with at the moment. But this is what cricket means to Indian fans. This is, you know, what happens. You let them in, they're going to come in and they're going to pack the stands, COVID-19 or not.
And the same in Ahmedabad.
Well, we're expecting that. And the crowds will be... Ahmedabad traditionally hasn't supported test cricket as well as Chennai has. And this new stadium that they've built is seats between 110 and 120,000. Now, you're never going to get that many in for a test match. I don't think you get that many in at a test match at the MCG. But in a place like Ahmedabad, it's going to be really hard. But with the day-night test being such a novelty now, there should be significant crowds. Chennai had between 12 and 13,000 on any given day. Ahmedabad might do a little better than that.
Thank you to Anand Vasu, who will be joining us during that third test match in Ahmedabad, which starts on February the 24th. In the meantime, we've got Ian Smith, the legendary Kiwi commentator and, of course, former keeper batsman in our virtual cricket club on Thursday night, starting at 7 p.m. It's going to be funny, it's going to be entertaining, it's going to be insightful. So please join us for that by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com. You can sign up to our club. It's £6 a month to join, but that money goes to the Professional Cricketers Trust, the charity that supports players who've fallen on hard times. So it's a really worthwhile cause. Smithy will be joining us on Thursday night at 7 p.m. Hope you can too. And of course, we'll be back to cover the third test match from Ahmedabad starting on February the 24th. And also, don't forget to subscribe to your new Cricketer magazine out this Thursday. And you can subscribe to that by going to www.thecricketer.com. Thanks for listening and keep your spirits up because it's still 1-1 in the India-England Test Series.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.